polls. Okay, I'll go ahead and call us to order this morning. First item on our agenda is the Pledge of Allegiance, if you'd like to join the board.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Next item is the public comment. This comment period is for the public to address topics on today's agenda. We've got a couple of requests here, and we'll wait and hold those until we have our public hearing on those items, if that's okay. Not seeing anybody else, the next item is consideration of minutes from 1-2 of 14.
Move approval.
Second.
The additional. Sanders?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Toot, aye. Minutes are approved. Consideration of personnel actions.
Move approval last minute.
Second.
Additional. Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Toot, aye. Personnel actions are approved. Under consent agenda, we're going to add a utility permit number 1433 and a road closure number 1425.
25?
Yep, 1425.
Move approval with noted changes.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any additional comments? Sanders?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. The consent agenda is approved. Under public hearing items, we've got three items this morning. Item number one is the first consideration of ordinance number 226, amending the boundaries of the official zoning map of Story County, Iowa, as referenced in Section 86.02 of the Story County Code of Ordinances, located in Section 19 of Franklin Township, under the ownership of Cameron Farms, LLC, from A1 to AR. Charlie Dissel from Planning and Development.
First consideration of ordinance, I believe 226 it was, which is case REZ 04-13. It's a Cameron Farms rezoning. Property owner is Cameron Farms, LLC. You're looking at approximately 70 acres of land, which is situated north of Cameron School Road, east of 505th Avenue, and south of West 190th Street. Amendment area includes 68.28 gross acres, current zoning being A1 agriculture. Current land use, it is classified as an agricultural use. And looking at the land use framework map designation, it is under the jurisdiction of the Ames Urban Fringe Plan. It does designate this property as rural residential with a little bit of natural area on it as well. Map here kind of shows the area that we're talking about. I've got Cameron School Road again to the south there, West 190th to the north, and 505th Avenue, which runs north and south. The proposal today is to change the zoning from the A1 agricultural district to the AR agricultural residential zoning district. This is in an effort to create a new residential subdivision. The current plan shows we put about 50 lots right there. The plan that we have, I believe, in front of us today is 42 lots, is it? 47, excuse me. So, yeah, about 50. The area is served by three existing public utilities. You've got Cameron School Road, 505th Avenue, and West 190th Street. Those numbers next to the roads there are actually the average daily traffic counts on those roads. Cameron School will be in the hard surface road, obviously has a majority of the traffic. The other two are gravel roads with a lot less traffic. It is also served by Midland Power, Xenia Rural Water, and the West Story Fire Department out of Gilbert. These are the standards of approval for rezoning. I know the board's well aware of these, so I won't go over them in detail. Just showing some of the key components of this. Again, this is the Ames Urban Fringe Plan map. You can see the rural residential here, mainly in this beige area. It does go off to the west here. This is the county line right there. This is the 2-mile limit of the city of Ames. So you can see where that is cut off. And then the area that we're looking at is here outlined in the green. The rural service and ag conservation areas, those are intended to be rural and agricultural in use and character throughout the life of the fringe plan. They should be protected from development that would damage the rural character of Story County. It is not intended for urban scale growth. Inappropriate development does include both residential and non-residential development, not characteristic of the countryside or a rural community. Residential land uses within the rural residential designation are developed at a rural density and in areas where urban infrastructure may not be in place for a time period which is beyond the Ames Urban Fringe Plan. And the rural residential designation does recognize a residential market segment that is seeking large lots in a rural setting, which benefits from agricultural activities on a small scale. Looking at the statement of intent of the AR zoning district, that does state that it is designed to provide for low-density, single-family, detached dwellings with limited activities interrelated with agricultural uses. Community facilities and open space uses that serve the residents may also be included in the layout of subdivisions within this district with special provisions to protect the rural residential character of the district. The district is not intended to permit isolated rural dwellings incompatible with the surrounding land uses. This is a land use map that is currently in place. The yellow areas, or excuse me, I believe this is a zoning map, not a land use map, I'm sorry. But the yellow areas are the R1 residential zoning, and then the brown is the AR, agricultural residential. So you can see this is a pretty large residential area in the county. In this one, the property that's proposed to be rezoned right here, if it is approved, this will turn into the brown, such as these areas up here. And this is actually the land use classification map. The yellow area is showing all the residential land uses as far as assessment classifications go. Those light green areas are where there's agricultural dwellings located on the property on large lots. Just kind of breaking down that area within 1 mile of the proposed amendment area here, approximately 52% of the land is used for agriculture, about 20% for residential, about 18% has the agricultural farmsteads, and approximately 10% for commercial. When you look at the 411 total parcels within a mile, you can see a vast majority of those parcels are used for residential uses, about 80%, and then even 4% more for the agricultural farmsteads. So you're looking at about 84% of the parcels being used residentially right now, the other 15% agriculture, and about 2% for commercial. The amendment area does include some land designated as natural area on the fringe plan, and that's primarily contained in the northeast portion of the parcel. Definitely does not exceed 50% of the total amendment area. The area is located wholly in the Squaw Creek watershed. It is not located in any floodplain. And looking at the LISA scores, they did both score under the threshold to allow for a rezoning to this classification. This is a map that we actually used last night for the subdivision request in front of the Planning and Zoning Commission. This just shows the elevation on the property, the lighter colors being where the low elevation points are. You can kind of see how the property drains into two specific areas there on the east side of the property. This just goes over the board's right to impose conditions on any rezoning. And going over notification letters that were sent to surrounding property owners and then legal publications that were done in the papers. Interagency review team has reviewed this proposal with no really big comments tied with it. And then on Monday, December 2nd, the Planning and Zoning Commission did review the request and did recommend approval with no conditions to the Board of Supervisors. With that, your four conditions are on the screen here above, and if there are any questions from me, I'd be happy to answer them at this time.
I would be curious, do we know the rationale on the one P&Z member who voted against this?
I believe that was Commissioner Kauser, Nancy Kauser, and I think her concern was just with the taking of valuable farm ground within the county.
Thank you.
Are you good? Okay. With that, I believe this is a point where we open the public hearing and ask for any comments. We do have two requests here. The first one is from Don Draper. If you just want to come over to the microphone and have a seat and introduce yourself, please.
Good morning.
Good morning to you.
Good morning.
I'm Don Draper, and my wife Dee is sitting over there in the purple coat. We live on the 190th Street, immediately north of, we own the property on the north side of Hickory Hills. I guess I have comments and questions, is that I apologize that I'm not as familiar as some of the rest of you in terms of all of what is intended in this subdivision. And I want to first of all say that I applaud you folks because you have tough decisions to make in terms of the growth of the county and at the same time trying to maintain a proper ecosystem in our society and in our world and in our environment. Dee and I have lived in this area for 37 and a half years in the same place, and we have seen the ecosystem change. And that's not due to that subdivision, but it's due to a lot of subdivisions around us, as well as other environmental things that have occurred. And I guess one of the concerns that I would have with this particular proposal is that if you look at the drainage of the property, I have two streams that come on my property. One is on the north side and one is on the south side. And the major flow from what the map that was just shown is going to come along the south side of our property. And that is of concern to me because one of the things that my wife and I have done over the last quite a few years, and particularly in the last 5 to 6 years, is we've undertaken a forest restoration process. And so we're in the process of cleaning up all of the understory and putting in new understory types of plants, new small trees and shrubs that are native to Iowa. We have most of the trees that are currently have most of the species of native trees that are exist in Iowa on our property now. And we want to restore some of the shrubs that would normally be in that area. We also have put in a native prairie on our property. We have most of the ephemeral plants that you will find, the native wildflowers that you would find in the state of Iowa. We have many of those species on our property. And in particular, they're located, if you notice the big yellow lines that are present there in the center of that are headed towards the northeast, that leads into a stream that will, when there's water at least, it runs right down, pardon?
Near the center? Or yeah. Okay, great. Thank you. That helps me. Thank you.
It will run right down in the back of our property. And I guess my concern would be is that if I don't know what the plans are for those yellow areas in terms of the buffer zone, what's going to be planted there, what kinds of I had heard something about prairies, and that's fine. We have a prairie ourselves, but you have to be careful in the mixes that you use in prairies because there are a lot of plants that are purchased in mixes that are actually invasive rather than being true native plants. And so that's of concern to us in terms of what's going to affect, how that might affect our property. Because what has happened recently in the last few years is that along 190th, the county has dug out the ditches in that area. And so what happens when we get a lot of rain is that the water fills up in the ditches on both sides of 190th Street, all the way from Squaw Creek, almost up to our property, and many times will be coming into our property. And the net effect of what happens there is that you create a mosquito haven. I mean, it's just loaded with mosquito larvae, and it's so bad that in many times we have to, when we go out to try and work, and we have one of the largest private gardens in the county in terms of perennials and things of that sort. We have a very large collection of hostas that we have on our property. And it's kind of unpleasant when you have all those mosquitoes there. So what I'm concerned about, again, is what is the plan for drainage of this property? And with respect to that, what will happen to the existing tile system that is on the property? There is a fairly extensive tile system that exists on this piece of land because it's been farmed very intensively for many, many years. And by the way, in terms of the ecosystem that I talked about, it's an extremely productive piece of ground. I'm not sure the exact yields on it, but I would suspect with current practices that have been employed on it, that in a good year you're looking at ground that probably will produce over 200 bushels an acre corn. It's very highly productive soil. And so that part concerns me. Another issue that is of concern to me is that, and I don't know the facts here, so I apologize for my comment if I'm in error, but I was told that when this subdivision goes in, that there would be the road from Cameron School here, in other words, 505th, would be paved part of the way up, but not all of the way up, and so that the north side of the property, as I was told, would not be paved. Now, that is also of concern to me because right now, in the summertime, when we don't have very much rain, I would say starting in early July on through October and many times November, it's a dust bowl. And you saw there's only 80 cars that's going by there right now, according to the counts. But if we put a subdivision in there, I can guarantee you that traffic will increase because I already know that there are many people who take that 505th Street, even though it's a gravel road, and they use it as a shortcut to get over to 69. It's used as a shortcut to get to school in Gilbert. It's just used as a shortcut to get to Gilbert. So the amount of traffic that's going to occur on that road is going to increase. And although our home is set way back from the road, the dust doesn't affect us so much, but it certainly will affect our neighbors, and there are not a lot of them there, but Mr. Gerard and his wife live right across the road from us. Lois Berg has a home that's adjacent to us, and the Vosses, and there's two other homes there that are along that road. Well, the dust is so bad that you can hardly breathe when you go out there in the summertime. So that's of concern to us, and so I guess I would think that if something like this were to occur, that something needs to be done to at least try and make that a hard surface road rather than leaving it gravel. Because the other thing, as the subdivision goes in, you know that this 190th is a direct access almost from the gravel pits. And so you're going to have all of the truck traffic coming from Marietta over on East Riverside up 69, and then they turn on 190th, and they'll be coming right straight across there. And that will increase the amount of traffic a lot more than during the construction phase. So those are some of my concerns that I have. And as I said, I don't know all of the details, but I felt that it's important that you folks understand that because I know you have some very tough decisions to make and that you're concerned about the welfare of our environment in particular. And so with that,
my first comment or question to you was when the planning was first proposed, did you or your wife have an opportunity to sit down with the developers and discuss some of these concerns, particularly as it relates to the potential draining, the runoff that might, you know, have some impact on some of the vegetation that you currently have in place?
To my knowledge, no.
An opportunity to your knowledge of reaching out to any of the landowners in the surrounding areas other than what is provided through planning and development?
No.
Mr. Friedrich's here today. Would you care to come up and address any of, see if you can address some of his concerns? If you'd be willing, that'd be great. Sure, come on up. There you go. Sit in front of this mic right here and just introduce yourself, if you would, please.
Thank you. Kurt Friedrich, Friedrich Land Development, 106th Street in Ames. And I certainly appreciate the concerns of my neighbors. We always try to be extremely proactive in terms of our outreach to our adjacent property owners when we're developing property, and this has certainly been true in this situation as well. We've particularly reached out to the folks at Hickory Hills, and I personally attended their executive committee meeting here on December 10th and talked with them about our proposal for the development and what their concerns were, and so forth. And we've sought to address those concerns primarily within the covenants that will be established for the subdivision. Many of the things that were mentioned by Mr. Draper typically are not put together in complete form at the time of rezoning or at the time of even preliminary plat. They're typically worked out and completed in terms of the construction plans, stormwater management plans, and so forth are finalized prior to the approval of the final plat. We certainly intend to do that and to continue to work in concert with county staff and our engineers to put together responsible plans. We were very keen on this property, understand that it is good farmland, but we were very keen on it because if you look across Story County, there are very, very few areas that are designated with the overlay of rural residential. And it's on hard surface road, so the land use plan has anticipated that low-density residential development would occur on this parcel of ground at some point. And so we feel very fortunate to be able to now be able to pursue residential development. What we have put together, we're not maximizing the number of units that we could potentially build on this property. The minimum lot size requirement under the AR, which is the zoning that we're seeking, is a minimum of 1 acre. And in all of our lots meet that requirement. Last night we had a little discussion. I think one lot was 90 square feet short, but that obviously can be remedied by moving the property line a couple of inches. So all of our lots will definitely meet the minimum lot size requirement. In addition, we're meeting all of the other county regulations. We're not asking for any kinds of concessions. We're just asking to do what the county's plan provides for. So this specific piece of land was very strategic in that, again, it has this rural residential overlay, which is very rare. And we're pleased to be involved here and to be able to pursue this. We've worked very closely with staff in coming up with our plan for the development. We have largely centered the open space. There's a 15% open space requirement for the development, and we have concentrated that largely along the natural drainage ways within the development and along the eastern boundary of the property. And it is within that eastern boundary, which it varies from 50 feet wide to 200 feet wide at different points, all up and down that property line. And it's within that area that we would seek to implement many of our stormwater management plans. We will be grading that area, so we'll create some depressed swales within those that can be bioswales and planted with the appropriate types of native grasses and can serve as detention. I would suggest that we will not be adding to the runoff that is currently occurring on the properties adjacent to ours. In fact, we will be able to hold and slow the flow that will be occurring to the east with our planned development. I know you're not looking at it right now, but we have in our preliminary plan, we have a north-south lane that would run up through the center of the property and essentially serve as a dam in a way that will, again, slow down significantly the flow of water from west to east and channel it into strategic areas where, again, we can hold and store and then release in an appropriate time. So between the infrastructure that we'll be installing, plus the stormwater management techniques with bioswales and detention areas, I'm confident that we'll be able to adequately serve the stormwater management needs in the area. As far as the zoning is concerned, again, the Planning and Zoning Commission made the recommendation of approval of our request for rezoning to AR, and it's consistent with the existing land use policy plan of rural residential. So with that, I guess that I could go into more detail, but that's probably for the preliminary plat. But any questions?
Not at this time.
Not at this time. It was just, I think it's important to hear this, for you to hear the concern of Mr. Draper and so forth, and to understand the process that we're going through. Under the ordinance changes and requests, is to allow for you to move forward with the future development plans that you've already talked about. When by the time you get to the actual construction phase and you start looking at mitigation plans, land layouts, and what I would call plants that could serve as so-called buffers, I think those are the kinds of things from Story County's point of view, and particularly from the county conservation point of view, are the types of innovation that we'd like to see not only individual property owners look at, but any, you know, new development basically that is going in, because I do think that the layout of a particular area for not only future generations, but for the other recreational opportunities that is certainly, you know, available. And I look at quality of life issues. I believe they address some of the concerns right now with the mosquitoes and other types of things. Obviously, if you do have gatherings of water sitting for long periods of time, that is going to be a problem. You're saying that you don't think that where they're referring to, that this development is going to add to that, if I heard you correctly.
That's correct.
So, okay.
And I will just say that we do have a fair amount of experience when it comes to, and we're maybe a little different than other developers in this regard, is that we do have a fair amount of experience with building conservation subdivisions. We're just finishing up a conservation subdivision in Ames called Ringenberg Park on the south side of Ames off of Oakwood Road, which we've implemented many techniques that we would be implementing here in this development. We've worked closely again with our engineers, with the DNR. We have a specific individual whose sole responsibility is to help us manage the natural areas and care for the prairie and so forth. And another development that we were associated with, the reserve in Ames, just on the south side of Ada Hayden Park, we were involved with Story County's, at the time, Steve Lekwa was selected to be involved with helping manage the care of the natural areas there, which were preserved. There's a preservation area there within the reserve. And we're certainly committed to doing similar things with this subdivision. It's obviously even more important, I think, in the county and in areas like this that are naturally sensitive to have mechanisms in place to effectively manage the environment and people to do that, and we're ready to do that.
And you had made mention, Mr. Draper, of the paving of 505th. We've had some discussions on all those roads in that area, but there's been no decision made on anything that's going to be paved or improved, or we get a lot of requests from different areas of the county for pavement and improved roads, and that's just an ongoing discussion we have. And as of now, there's been no commitment to pave anything in that area. So certainly. We have another individual by the name of Dean Girard that had put in a request to speak.
Thank you. My name is Dean Girard. I live at 4957 West 190th Street, which is directly across the street from Don Draper. It's the northeast corner of the property. I briefly wanted to review a few objectives and principles that are laid out by the Story County Development Plan before I speak on this matter, if you don't mind. And I'll just hit a couple of highlights that stand out to me. Under the Story County Development Plan, the goals set the stage for the development of the land use framework principles and guiding objectives presented within this plan. The goals for the County Development Plan are as follows. Identify and preserve productive agricultural land for continued agricultural use. Identify methods for protecting water quality. Implement planning policies to protect and preserve sensitive natural areas and open space. Guiding objectives, Story County will continue to foster land use policies and regulations which conserve the productivity and preserve the availability of high-value agriculture lands for the production of food and fiber and seek to reduce potential conflicts between development and agricultural practices. Principle 1, the county's natural resources, wetlands, native prairies, and stream corridors are key indicators of the ecological health of Story County. These natural resources are identified and need to be conserved and enhanced. Wetland habitat will be encouraged in areas where soil characteristics and drainage indicate locations of past marshes. Excuse me. The area that all of this drains into here, if you were to pull up Google Maps, it shows this 25 acres and the 60 acres on the north side of 190th Street as a water area. They have not been established as wetlands by the county because they've been privately owned for a long time. I imagine if they were donated to the county, they would definitely be conserved and presented as such. As you can see with the contour of the property, there are two primary areas where 80% of this property all flows into. The main port, obviously, would be behind Mr. Draper's property that flows down here. The second area is on the north end here, which then flows down on the street to which myself and him share easements onto that road. Both of us over the last several years have had continued county excavation work on our easements to try and regulate the flow of water because it's been such an issue. And that's just been on the north side, which is much less of an issue as far as the amount of volume of water that drains as opposed to the south side of his property. So his area is controlled a little bit better due to tiling and the natural areas, the tree, the buffer zone, that sort of thing. The area to which they plan on presenting, I'm not sure if I can find it here. I don't know how to minimize this to pull up my pictures. I apologize. If
Charlie will come up and give
somebody
me
that can help me. I just wanted to. It's in the C drive, so or the
is
the
on that phone,
yeah the D drive. I'm sorry. Yeah. Thank you. So this is currently their development plan, and as you can see, Mr. Friedrich was talking about the road that splits the middle of the property for their design, which would become somewhat of a buffer, a dam, so to speak. And the common areas that he spoke of would be this top line here, and then this is the natural area currently, and this is also a natural area currently, and so then it leaves this 50-foot strip, basically. Now, this is their very first plan. It's changed a little bit, but essentially it's the same amount of plots that they've established. However, when you factor in that all of these plots here are going to be 1 acre, house, driveway, fertilized, short grass, you know, everybody's going to be under a home organization, I'm sure, so everybody has to maintain a certain landscape to their property, fertilize, that sort of thing. The amount of drainage in this 65-acre area is going to increase dramatically from what 65 acres of plentiful corn and soybeans could absorb in flooding and that sort of thing. To say that this road is going to act as a dam, it probably will have depressions on both sides, but there's no way that anybody would buy a house on one of this west side of the road if they were not sure that there was culverts that then allowed the water to flow underneath it to the other side to continue to drain out. So the fact that this area being proposed that it's going to retain water more effectively than it currently is by not being a development, I don't find that plausible. I'm not an engineer, so I can't really speak on that. That's just me speaking on my own thoughts, I guess, of what I've seen in water drainage, what we're aware of, what we've seen with, you know, Squaw Creek's power and destruction over the last 5 years with University Avenue and Duff Avenue being underwater twice in that time frame. So this development is a very big concern of mine as far as drainage to the wetlands. It's a concern of mine to the traffic, which currently there's 7 residents that reside on 505th and 190th Street in that gravel stretch. And for there to be 7 residences, 3, I believe, of which are retired residents, to have 80 cars a day, it's pretty extensive, really. And as Mr. Draper said, it's primarily used as a cut-through. So people do not have to take Cameron School Road to George Washington Carver and sit at the stop sign and wait for traffic and then turn north and go a quarter of a mile and then turn again east onto 190th Street. It's just a straight cut through, less traffic. I have people that, and Mr. Draper can attest to this, that drive by twice a day, once in the morning, going eastbound or westbound, and once again in the evening, eastbound or westbound, that are doing 50, 60 miles an hour coming up over this hill, which is a very dangerous hill. There's 3 blind drives on it. The county has done extensive work on drainage and trying to raise drives and keep it maintained, that sort of thing. So any increased traffic is going to be a major issue as far as safety and a concern of me with having a young family on a blind drive. And also just there are days when I pull out of my driveway where I think, geez, if, you know, if I'm backing out and somebody's coming careening over the hill, I could get wiped out or they could wipe out. And, you know, I've had somebody take out my mailbox twice and I've been there for 5 years. So it's a very dangerous area. There's no posted regulations of speed because it's a gravel road. So my concern is definitely traffic. I have a very big concern about the water drainage. And I would like to show you also, this was a picture that was taken. This was taken in May of this past year. Now, we all know that May was one of the wettest or the wettest month in the history of Iowa. But this is my house here. And this is Mr. Draper's house here, and this is the hill and 190th Street, which is underwater in this picture. This was taken from a kayak, and this road was closed for a matter of 3 or 4 days. Well, it was underwater for 3 or 4 days. It was closed for a week and a half or so. Now, this is the second time I've seen this take place, and I've only been here 5 years. Now, in 37 years, I have never asked Don how many times he's seen it underwater, but I can't imagine it's been once every 3 years that it is underwater. And this is definitely a byproduct of development, housing developments, drainage upstream, and irresponsible growth and not maintaining proper wetlands and natural areas and buffer zones, which I've heard discussions that they had talked about possibly putting in a dam in this area at once upon a time. But as time goes on, it becomes way too expensive to consider that because this is obviously a major liability to the city of Ames with the flooding that takes place, which has been happening more regularly. So I just wanted to, you know, remind the board about the development goals and what has been put in place, and that you know, problems like this, flooding, my house is up on a hill, it doesn't affect me. I can get, you know, lakefront property for a few days and kind of laugh and smile about it, but there's many other people downstream that do not have that option, and they have basement lakefront property, and it becomes an issue. So by building a development here, regardless of what the plan is and their intentions of putting in natural grasses and plants that absorb and help contain it, with the limited amount of excavation for drainage that will be done to put this plan in play, I think that we're going to be contributing even more so to water hazards within City of Ames and Story County, and I don't believe that it's responsible and proper way to develop our future in this county. I think we have an obligation to explore ways that might be more expensive, but to develop responsibly. That prevents us from having to spend more money and tax dollars down the road to fix flooding issues, that sort of thing. Now, Mr. Friedrich said that he was not maximizing the property value by he could have put on more houses, but in a sense, that is not actually accurate. It's the development plan states that you must have 1 acre for each parcel on a project of this size, which they do, which is 47 parcels, roughly. The overall project net acreage is 56 acres, and the development plan says that you have to have 15% of a buffer zone. So 15% would actually give you about 45 and a half acres. So that is why they're currently having problems coming up with a plan, which he stated last night in the zoning plan board that they've been over this and they've had 15 redesigns on this plot, and yet they still haven't come up to meet all the regulations that are required by the Story County Development Plan. So I understand that this property was a very expensive purchase, and the anticipation of growth is important to the City of Ames. In order to maximize the most of this property purchase, obviously you have to develop so many plots to reacquire the purchase value of your land. However, by doing so, you're forfeiting the natural areas, and you're contributing to the drainage issues by not having several of these lots here and here and here just become native areas or huge buffer zones. I mean, why would you spend a couple thousand dollars to put in some trees and plants there when you can get $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 for each acre to a house that's going to be built, which I remind everybody is being developed by the same company that purchased land. It's Friedrich Construction. So this is, you know, I understand that development is necessary, and I understand that there are very few areas that are as ideal as this by having a blacktop butted up against it. But when you talk about development in Story County, I think it's important to not just focus our development has to be in Ames, which is a portion of Story County. There are lots of areas in Story County that can be developed that are accessible that do not have the negative effects of watershed and you know, just disruption of a natural area and very rich, pristine farmland, as Mr. Draper said, which could be, you know, 200 bushels an acre when harvesting. So I would just like you guys to take all of this into consideration. I understand that, as Mr. Draper and Mr. Friedrich stated, that you guys have some tough decisions to make, but there are responsible, ethical ways to manage the environment and build so that my daughter has a place when she's older, so that Mr. Draper's grandchildren have a place to live that's responsible, that's not being hazards to flooding every 3 to 5 years, that's not susceptible to damage to high-speed traffic, to blind drives, to increased issues and that sort of thing. So that's all I have to say, unless you have any questions for me, but I don't know that I could answer them necessarily. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Not so much. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, yeah. We, well, that's the chair, Mr. Chair.
If you've got a statement you want to make, go ahead.
First of all, I want to thank you for your comments. I believe that, you know, we as a board and certainly planning and development and all the people on the commission take seriously what the commission's goals and responsibilities are. When those were established, it did not mean that there would never be any development on prime land.
Absolutely.
It meant that there would be responsible development considerations done, and whether the land met all of the requirements, we talk such things as the LISA score and all of the other different types of things. And when we look at natural vegetations and so forth, we want to try to maintain those as much as possible. But I think the notion that citizens should never take should assume that things will always remain as they once were. You know, I came to Ames in 1966, and 24th Street was pretty much north of there was farmland. Well, look at it today. Now, for those who have lived in Ames prior to that, they had enjoyed a certain rural quality of life of the surrounding areas. So it's decision makers and policy makers' role is to make sure that any development will have as negative of an impact as possible on future growth and development. And I believe that the Zoning Commission and our interagency's review staff certainly has tried to take a look at a lot of those things. Not to say that some of the suggestions that you have thought about or mentioned would not be ideal and things that probably could make a difference. But whether or not they would be done is always going to be a matter of individuals' opinion. I believe that what you have suggested here certainly is very appropriate. It's certainly something that we take a look at. But I do not think in any way, shape, or form that if we would approve this development, that it takes us away from what our stated goals and objectives are. I think that is why we do what we do and why we critically analyze any new development to see what that impact would be. But again, I think you raised some good points, and I certainly thank you for your comment as well as the Drapers in that regard. I'll go back to
Mr. Friedrich, if you'd like to come up. Okay.
Just, I guess, wanted to point out that in our lot layout that we have submitted to the county, many of the lots do exceed 1 acre. And again, if we were trying to, out of all respect, if we were trying to maximize the number of lots, we would have made each lot exactly 1 acre and not any larger than that. But we are not trying to do that. And as far as our open space calculations, by the way that we always typically calculate open space calculations, we exceed with the proposed plan the amount of green space that we have proposed in our plan. This is a 70-acre parcel of land in gross. And then when you take out right-of-ways, you come down to a number of about 56 acres. And when you multiply the 56 acres times the 15%, you come up with a number of around 8.4 acres that need to be preserved out of the 70 acres for natural area, preserved natural area. The proposal that we have right now is 8.88 acres of proposed natural areas being preserved. So that's all.
Thank you. Anybody else that would like to speak to this matter? If not, I will close the public hearing and turn to the board for direction.
I have questions for Charlie.
Yes, beforehand,
Wayne, did you have something you wanted
to? No, I did have a question back to Charlie too, but go ahead. You may cover it.
Charlie, take us through what we're being asked to approve today and the number of additional steps that would have to occur between now and any development actually happening.
Yeah, today you're solely looking at the zoning of the property, and the zoning is to allow for the future residential subdivision. If the rezoning is ultimately approved, the next step is the subdivision plat that's submitted. And in this case, it would be a major subdivision plat because it's more than the four lots, plus it has infrastructure that's going in. That process started last night with the Planning and Zoning Commission. They did review the preliminary plat because, from staff standpoint, we've done this in the past. We kind of allow them to go through concurrently sometimes the zoning and the subdivision. The applicant waited 1 month after the zoning, and assuming that would have been approved last night, they were hoping to bring the subdivision plat forward after third consideration of this particular rezoning request. That did get delayed with the Planning and Zoning Commission for a few issues, so we hope to get that back to the Planning and Zoning Commission on February, and then you'd be looking at that again if this is approved sometime early February.
But it would have to come back to this board before it moves forward.
And the peculiar thing with a major subdivision plat is you look at the preliminary subdivision plat, which carries a recommendation from the Planning and Zoning Commission, and then you also look at the final plat. The final plat doesn't go to the Planning and Zoning Commission, so you would be reviewing almost two subdivision plats.
It would come back to us. Talk to us about the rural residential overlay that currently exists in our...
Let me go back to... Here's, again, the Ames Urban Fringe Plan. And as you well know, the Ames Urban Fringe Plan was a huge undertaking by Story County and the City of Ames. There was a lot of work that went into it, a lot of studies that went into it. What you have here, when you look at this map, is you have... Excuse me. You have these light brown areas that show up here. Those are the rural residential areas. You have these yellow areas right here. Those are considered kind of the transitional areas. And areas that won't be shown here are the urban residential areas. So the way the fringe plan looks at residential growth is almost in the three-tier approach, the rural residential being that outer tier. Usually it's going to be the furthest away from the city, and the city doesn't really never plan on annexing into that area within the life of the plan, at least. So that's kind of how this lays out. And then you'll have these green areas out here that actually are the agricultural preservation areas on the fringe plan, the areas that we don't intend to have any growth in. Mr. Friedrich was right in the sense that the rural residential areas on the fringe plan, there really isn't much vacant farm ground that carries that designation. This is one of the, probably, this is the largest area, I would say, in the fringe plan that carries this. And again, when that was approved by the board and the Ames City Council, I think it was looked at because it was almost a continuation of the growth that's already occurred out there. It made the most sense to kind of continue that growth pattern into this area. And again, we had to put it somewhere. So it's just kind of where it went with that. And again, done with a lot of studies. You'll also see with that, there was this darker green area are the natural resource areas, and there is that finger that kind of sticks into this property. The current subdivision plat does not develop that particular piece of ground. It does show it as an outlot, so that is respecting that area.
But okay, so when I view the work that was done here, and I would say by previous boards, it was before Paul and I were on, Wayne, right. When you were serving with the previous board, and the Ames City Council, and the two planning groups working together to get that done.
And Gilbert, too.
And Gilbert, it seems to me that by having this designation, there was a recognition among those groups that ultimately this is where this ground is going to head, is some kind of future housing development. Is that accurate for me to view it that way?
Yes.
Right.
Those are my questions for Charlie.
Yeah, my only question is going back to in the report you said the interagency review team did review this. I kind of looked through. I didn't see any red flags, nor did I see even from the commission some conditions. Usually you would anticipate if there were some problem areas that we would see a recommendation either coming from either one of the interagency review teams or from the staff, and I did not see that, so it gave me a greater level of comfort that we have tried to look carefully at the development plan that is being proposed, even though it's in its preliminary stages. And until we get through this first phase, we won't be able to understand the full magnitude of what's going to take place. So I feel that those kinds of things were there. And did I miss something in terms of the overview done by not only staff but planning and development as well as the interagency review team?
No, and again, the rezoning, you're mainly looking at shifting the land use from agricultural to residential. We try not to ever show concepts of plans because realistically this rezoning could be approved, Mr. Friedrich could sell the land tomorrow, and somebody else would come forward with a completely different development plan. And that's just how it goes. I don't foresee that happening, but it is a possibility. But in the subdivision plat that we're looking at, that subdivision plat also has gone to the interagency team, and there are some comments on that that you will see when that does come to you. And that's pretty typical when we look at rezonings and subdivisions, is there's more comments usually with the subdivision plat because at that point, you're actually able to see the concept and provide more insight onto what's actually happening. This is just merely changing the land use.
Put our alternatives back up there.
Yep.
Now for Charlie.
I'm good.
Okay. Board, I'll turn to you.
Well, I'll go. With the understanding that before anything, we're going to move forward on this ground, it would come to us multiple, at least a couple different times. And I would say to Mr. Friedrich, I would encourage you to be aware that this board is going to be highly attuned to any potential negative consequences that this development may bring forth. I mean, I would like to see, I think previous boards have recognized that rural development is going to happen out there. I think Charlie pointed out that of the there were 400 and some odd parcels out there, over 80% of them are already residential. I think that there's a place for this kind of development, but we want the right development at all times. So with all that in mind, I would move to accept the recommendation of the Planning and Zoning Commission approving the proposed rezoning request, adopt Ordinance 226, approving the official zoning map amendment on first consideration, and set the second consideration for next Tuesday, January 14th.
I will second that.
Got a motion and a second. Any further discussion?
No, just again to reiterate, I think it is extremely helpful for us as well as the developers to have concerned citizens voice their thoughts regarding the potential impact to development. We never want to make all the assumptions. We don't have all the answers, and I agree that most of us are not engineers, but I think it is very helpful for us to be able to understand where things fall. And so I want to thank both of you for coming today and sharing your thoughts, and hopefully you will have opportunities if this moves forward to reach out with the developers as they begin some of the other phases to help mitigate this concern.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Aye. Ordinance 226 passes on the first reading, second reading set for the 14th. And our next public...
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks, everybody, for coming this morning. Our next public hearing item is first consideration of Ordinance 227, prohibiting the sale of nicotine delivery systems and unregulated products containing nicotine without retail cigarette or tobacco products permit, restricting publicly accessible display of such products, and prohibiting the sale of nicotine delivery systems and unregulated products containing nicotine to minors. Karen Mills.
Okay. Karen, you look different.
A lot different. Unfortunately, Karen couldn't be here. She's the chair of our Prevention Policy Board. I'm Jan Barron, and I've been a longtime member of that board. And we want to say thank you for considering this, and also thank you for your participation on the Story County Prevention Board Coalition, which you know is a coalition of many different entities throughout the county, and we appreciate that. Well, we are hoping that you will approve this Ordinance 227. It has been developing over the past year and more, as Wayne pointed out, before the meeting began. And it was written and presented in partnership with the Story County Board of Health, and also the Story County Attorney Holmes has looked at it. As you know, this ordinance proposes the that nicotine be treated as tobacco, in that those who sell it be required to obtain a tobacco permit and be held to the same standards as tobacco retailers. And this, of course, pertains to the sale of e-cigarettes. And tobacco retailers must card, as you know. They cannot sell to minors, and the products must be behind the counter, which reduces opportunities for shoplifting. Currently, nicotine products, e-cigarettes, are often found on store counters. Nicotine is a highly poisonous substance, and in fact, it is the most addictive of all substances, even more so than heroin or cocaine. We have to point out that potential regulation of e-cigarettes does not impact the sales of cessation products as recognized by the FDA. It does impact the sale of cigarettes, which are currently not regulated in the state, which have as much as 17 times as much nicotine as smokable cigarettes. And they are currently marketed as harmless and an aid to quitting smoking, but this has not been proven by research. Other cities, such as New York City, has banned the sale of e-cigarettes. And Linn County has already an ordinance, and this proposed ordinance is patterned after that county ordinance. And in that county, the tobacco retailers supported this ordinance. The ordinance also is designed to bring attention to the harm that e-cigarettes present to minors, but it does not restrict sales to adults. I think those are the major points we wanted to emphasize. Do you have any questions?
Not at this time.
Oh, not at all.
I would like to thank the Prevention Policy Board and YSS and the County Attorney's Office for their work. This came to the Board of Health probably almost a year ago, initially, and I think in November or December, I think you finally had it to the point where it was an ordinance form. So I just want to appreciate everybody's hard work on that.
Thank you. And we also brought you a copy of Kids Count, which might give you some useful insight into some of the patterns of youth, particularly as it relates to use of alcohol, drugs, and tobacco.
Thank you. With that, I will open the public hearing for Ordinance 227. If anybody would like to speak to this ordinance, now would be the time. What, Margaret? Yeah, if you'd, sure.
Margaret, you're part of the public, aren't you?
I am, but I didn't down for a spot in the line here. So, Margaret James. Actually, I'm representing the Story County Environmental Health Department. I was just wondering who would be involved in enforcement of this, because it does mention the health department being involved in investigating these cases. So, would it be public health?
Well, that's the question that I have, and I haven't had an answer or an opportunity to speak to the county attorney about it, but it does state in there that law enforcement officers would be, or county health officers, so I think it would be similar to what they do when they go out, when they do their stings to try to get minors to buy cigarettes. I know the sheriff's office used to do that a couple of times a year, once a year, now they do it. So
it's been changed.
Because it's really off the beaten path of the environmental health department.
Right.
Those aren't facilities that we go to.
Right. And we don't see that as something that would be anticipated either.
Okay.
Yeah.
I wonder if we could change the language to just exclude the health department? Or
Well, I don't know that we need to change it.
I don't think we have to.
If
If nobody else is going to do it, then I'll help you out and we'll get it done.
Now, see, I think what's helpful here is that the Environmental Health recognizes that this is a serious threat, particularly to minors, and we're looking at partnering here with the various agencies to bring to light not only that with the local retailers to try to make sure that access to this is restricted, particularly for minors. So I think that's the value of having this go through the Environmental Health. I know Linn County did this in a very similar manner as well. And I just wanted to acknowledge that. Okay.
Anybody else would like to speak to this? Not seeing anybody, I will close the public hearing and turn to the board.
I would move first consideration of Ordinance 227, prohibiting the sale of nicotine delivery systems and unregulated products containing nicotine without retail cigarettes or tobacco products permit, and to restrict publicly accessible display of such products and prohibiting the sale of nicotine delivery systems and unregulated products containing nicotine to minors. And that's it.
Second consideration.
And set second consideration for the 14th next Tuesday. Thank you.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion?
I just want to say that I really appreciate the work of the Prevention Policy Board on this, and I abhor that some companies are utilizing this mechanism to market to minors. And so
different,
anything we can do.
Different flavors. You can get bubblegum flavored.
Anything we can do to make sure that this remains available to adults who choose that's the way they want to live, but understanding that it's not appropriate to market this to our minors, not appropriate to have it out there in front of them. And so I'm completely supportive.
Okay. Mr. Clinton?
Aye.
Mr. Sanders?
Aye.
Toot, aye. Ordinance 227 passes on the first reading. Second reading set for January 14th.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. And our last public hearing item, this is like the bad penny. Consideration of Ordinance 228 adopting Iowa Administrative Code Section 641. It's actually Code 1.12 for quarantine and isolation. Margaret, if you'd like to come up just briefly, this came to the Board of Health several years ago and was passed, and for whatever reason never made it to this board. And the isolation and quarantine concerns people or animals with communicable disease. And in the event that they need to be isolated or quarantined, the county needs to have some sort of a ordinance or mechanism in place to actually enforce what the state recommends. Is that correct?
That's correct. I couldn't say it any better. It is for animals and people, not just communicable diseases, but very serious communicable diseases. SARS is a good example of that. And the hope is that this would never have to be used. We would count on voluntary quarantine and isolation, and then this would be in place for those individuals who refuse to do that.
And this would give the county an actual enforcement mechanism. Okay. Any questions for Margaret? And with that, I would open the public hearing. If anybody wants to speak to the isolation and quarantine ordinance, now is your time. Not seeing anybody coming to the mic, I'll close the public hearing and turn to the board.
I would move on first consideration Ordinance 228, adopting 641 Iowa Administrative Code 1.12, quarantine and isolation, and set second consideration for Tuesday, January 14th.
Second.
A motion and a second. Any further discussion? Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Toot, aye. Ordinance 228 passes on first reading. Second reading will be January 14th. Thank you, Margaret. Additional items. Consideration of Resolution 1454, approving the final subdivision plat of the Lee subdivision located on certain lands under the ownership of Virginia M. Lee Trustee located Section 11, Palestine Township. And here comes Ryan Newstrom. Oh, wait.
Oh.
It's Leanne Harder.
It's Leanne Harder.
Yeah.
Is it a different?
It doesn't quite fit the
Oh, I get you. Okay. All right.
This is a proposed subdivision before you under the ownership of a Virginia Lee Revocable Trust, care of Virginia Lee. Property is a little under 40 acres, 38.6 gross acres. Currently, split zoning with C commercial and A1 agricultural. And that split zoning is the reason why this is being processed and coming before you in this manner rather than a more simple process. It's for a minor subdivision to create two lots. And as I said, normally it would be an agricultural subdivision plat, but that split zoning does require that to go through a minor subdivision process. This is the property notification map that was sent out to surrounding property owners within a quarter mile of the property. Those are highlighted in blue. The property under consideration is in red. It is north of the city of Huxley along Highway 69. We did review the requirements set forth in Section 87.08 of the Code of Ordinances of Story County and found that those are all met with the proposed subdivision. And in addition to that, all the required items, all the items required to be placed on the face of the plat have been satisfied too. And we did not receive comments from the public nor interagency review team. On December 2nd, the Story County Planning and Zoning Commission did review the proposed subdivision plat and did forward a recommendation to you with conditional approval. That be that either a waiver from the City of Huxley or a resolution approving the subdivision be submitted to planning and development prior to releasing the signed resolution. And that reference to signed resolution is your signed resolution. So at this point, we still have not received that, but again, the condition is worded that you can still take action today. And your four alternatives are on the screen. I'll be glad to answer any questions.
So if I heard you correctly, you're saying that you felt that release from the city of Huxley was something desired. Could you maybe tell me why, you know, you felt that was necessary?
This property is located within 2 miles of the city of Huxley. As such, the Code of Iowa does require the city to take action on subdivisions within 2 mile jurisdictional authority. So we have not received any action from the city of Huxley, whether they waived that or approved or denied the subdivision.
So we just don't know.
We don't know.
Okay.
The inclination has been that they're going to waive or approve it, but that's through discussions with staff. We just don't have that official mechanism, and given the holiday schedule, I'm not sure what their meeting schedule was.
I move approval of Resolution 1454 with conditions.
Second.
And a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Sanders?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Toot, aye. Resolution 1454 is approved. Thank you, Leanne. Next is discussion and consideration of separate insurance coverage for the cannon and plaque that sit out here in front of this building. And it's got my name on it, so. Last February, was it, we rededicated the cannon and the plaque, and it was brought to our attention that cannon holds potentially holds considerable monetary value as it sits. Some concern was raised about the cannon under the current insurance that the county holds. We've had discussions with our insurance carrier. It would appear that the insurance carrier have had conversations with ICAP, and their suggestion is that we have a separate, I guess you would call it a separate rider for this cannon and the plaque. The early estimate on this cannon, and I do have a call into a guy that's trying to find somebody that can give us an appraisal, was $250,000 for the cannon. And they've got the plaque, which was given to the county at the time the cannon was given to the county, which was in the early 1900s. At $50,000. So the additional insurance for those two items annually would be $575. And if we did approve this, the prorated rate for right now would be $325 to get us through the end of this fiscal year. So I guess we need to decide whether or not we want to pay an additional $575 a year to protect an asset that has some historic significance.
Let me ask, does this also involve vandalism, as far as you know?
So it would be the same, I would assume it would be the same coverage that all of our buildings and property have.
Right.
I think, except for the fact that it's got the, I suppose, the unique circumstances. If somebody, I mean, it's been vandalized once before, it's not unrealistic to think that it wouldn't happen again. So I would assume that would cover vandalism, theft or vandalism. You're obviously not going to be able to replace it, but...
Well, in order to further discussion, I would move that we actually obtain the insurance coverage. I am concerned about the overall appraisal value. I think that would be valuable information for us to have. Whether or not we need to have that prior to the final adoption or approval or not is my question. But my motion for the purpose of discussion would be to move that we obtain separate insurance coverage for the Callahan plaque.
Second.
Motion and a second. Any further discussion on this?
Well, I think that based upon this summer opportunity, the heightened awareness of this cannon and the historical nature of it, knowing that there have been some other cannons in various other states and counties over the years that have had some vandalism and or attempts for destruction from, you know, what I consider individuals that have a different agenda, I think for the dollars that we have put forth, I think it is worth us trying to maintain this history for this particular area. When you look out at the front of the building with the other veterans, your memorial and tribute fair, I think this is just something over the years that just never really came to the supervisor's attention that we really needed to consider that. And I just feel that this is a cost that I think we ought to bear.
Well, it is a piece of American history. The information that we've obtained is that it's probably one of only three that are in existence, and maybe one of only 40 or 50 that were ever manufactured.
And it's the only one with the number one on it.
Yep. First one made, I believe it was captured at the Battle of Shiloh.
Right. You know what? It's property of the people of Story County, no different than this building that we're sitting in or other buildings. It's our responsibility to protect those in the best way possible, and to me, this is part of it.
Absolutely. And now I can't remember who made the motion.
I did.
Mr. Clinton.
Aye.
Mr. Sanders.
Aye.
Toot, aye. And we will we'll have our cannon plaque properly insured. No agency reports. Department reports. Margaret Janes, Environmental Health. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Ooh, color.
Good morning, and thank you for this opportunity to present quarterly to the board. Whoops. I think it's too early in the morning here for me, apparently.
Not that early in the morning anymore.
Okay, so our main program, of course, is septic systems. I've showed the trend over the last 3 years. Looks like they've been going up. I think we're going to hit a plateau. I remember many years ago, 80 was about kind of a normal number, and then we went way down because of the economy, and then we're back up a little bit. In speaking with Boone County Sanitarian, he said that his numbers are a little higher than Story County's, but they did not have the time of transfer inspection for as many years as Story County did, so they're still catching up with the time of transfer ones, replacing entire systems, or we're doing just a lot of repairs on those. So we're in better shape, actually. We have 9 outstanding notice of violations, most of them being septic. Right now, you really can't report on that because of the weather. And we have 10 outstanding binding agreements, 5 overdue, all of which came from time of transfer inspections or postponing inspections. For wells, again, I show the 3-year comparison. It's pretty flat. Most of them are geothermal wells, a few water wells. Most of them are for agricultural use. Currently, we have about $16,000 remaining in our grant fund through the end of this fiscal year, and I've changed a policy in that the first of the year, so halfway through the fiscal year, I will allow money to go toward rehabbing wells that are a secondary source. So again, next year then, we will wait the first 6 months and let the plugging and the water testing get first crack at that grant money and then open it up to these other wells also. That way we could possibly take advantage of that money a little better. Wet inspection program, 8 open cases. Most of them are just not responding to questions. One with children residing, and levels for that child is going down. My certification is up again this February, so I have to go sit for a class and take a written exam in February. However, Homeward is interested in dropping that grant from IDPH, and that will be discussed at the next Board of Health meeting in February. I have mixed emotions on that. I know the state would cover that program, but I don't know if they would receive as good a service. It's kind of nice to be able to help somebody with that when they call in instead of transferring them on to the state. So we'll see what Homeward has to say about that. Not a lot of activity on the pool tattoo and tanning programs at this time. We've had 2 individuals come in, operators come in to take the tanning exams. They have to sit and take the written exam in our office there, and then we grade it and give them a certificate. We conducted meet and greets at all the tattoo establishments, just letting them know that we're out there, and no pool activity for this past quarter.
Sample tattoos?
No samples. No samples of tattoos. That's Matt's job. Complaints, hoarding, pretty much that is not a public health issue. It's a personal issue unless it starts spilling out or the odor starts affecting neighbors, especially in the case of like rental units, things like that, that would disrupt others' healthy lifestyles. We've received 2 odors, and they were both manure product related. I do believe that they are not from local farms. They were brought in and it was sold as bulk dry manure, and it's under the authority of Idols. It has a special smell to it, sort of a dead animal smell to it, and we've had 2 complaints on that. We've looked into it, made some calls, tried to figure out where that product is coming from. Again, it's probably just Idols, so bulk, it could be coming from quite a ways away, not a local farm.
Turkey Farms, isn't it?
Turkey Farms, yep, that's right. Yep. So, trainings and meetings that my staff has been to, I went to the initial DuPont Citizens Advisory Committee. There's another meeting, the second meeting is tonight, which I plan to attend. And then all of us also attended the county safety class that was offered to us, and also the OSHA safety. In addition, Kathy attended the radon pre-construction class in Washington, D.C. That was fully funded by the National Environmental Health Association. This slide just shows those areas that where cities, namely Nevada and Ames, are expanding their sewer lines into some more rural areas. And so we're having some switch over from using on-site septic to hook into the big pipe, especially south of Ames, Woodview subdivision. Our policy right now is that if you have a system that's working, you can keep that, and then if you have to repair it or replace it, that's when you would be required to hook up if you're within 200 feet of the line. Subdivision updates, Bella Woods off of Cameron School Road. Soils work and septic permits have been completed on 8 of the 15 lots. I sat in on the conceptual review for the proposed Friedrich subdivision that was discussed today. My suggestion to them was to consider a package plant for those 47 lots, and that way you have better management and maintenance of that kind of system. They said that that would be cost prohibitive and that they are planning on going with the individual on-site systems. One thing that was not mentioned earlier this morning that would add to the impact of that area is each house, if you figure three bedroom, it's 450 gallons per day coming, you know, added to that area through their septic systems. So I don't know if the flood control study folks are looking at that, you know, the impact on the Squaw Creek watershed. Earlier this week, no, last week, I met with Bella Holmes and Ames John Dunn, who's the water superintendent guy over there, regarding the proposed subdivision at the Ames Country Club. I don't know if you're familiar with that. Currently, it's zoned R2, which requires a package plant. Again, they don't want to go that route because of the cost, and so they would have to go through planning and request a rezoning of that, probably back to an R1, and that would allow for individual septic systems on site. And then the final lot in Cameron Pine subdivision is being developed. So that one's just about zipped up. Board of Health is considering two new policy changes for the Environmental Health Department. This is Mark Speck. I left that in there to remind us that it was like 100 degrees or so this summer, really hot. Everybody looked kind of goofy like that with the wet towels hung over their heads. Currently, site review is $100 and the permit is another $140. A certified engineer would cost $400 versus $100 to do the site review. Counties that currently require an engineer or a soils professional to do this as opposed to the sanitarian include Dallas, Johnson, Polk, and Dubuque counties. Pros to going this route is that it's less physical labor and less liability for the county. The cons is that it's more expensive at the homeowner and less involvement by the county. I don't know the soils as well if I'm not out there doing the work myself. This came up just because it's been brutally difficult to do these septic system reviews because the ground is so hard. So we're just kicking around ideas on what to come up with, possibly keeping someone on retainer to do those really tough sites to come in and do them for us. That I did not include in the budget, though. That, you know, we talked about setting aside some money to have someone on retainer. I did not include that in the budget because we hadn't come to any decisions on that. And then the other one I presented at the last quarterly meeting, the other policy review, is zoning applications. When they come into planning and development, we look at them when there's a bedroom added, or if we also look at them just to make sure that the footprint of the new building is not going to interrupt the septic. We would like to be looking at all of the applications and asking them to prove that they have a septic system. And the Board of Health decided to table that for discussion in February. Scanning project, this is my last slide, 14 out of 20 drawers completed, so we're getting there. Any questions?
Back up to the one about the, well, there you go, that right there. This one I think probably has more impact than anything.
Yes.
Because anytime anybody comes in that wants to do, put on an addition, do whatever you're going to do, you're going to have to prove that you have an approved septic system.
Yeah. And the build, yeah, so the builders, their concern is that it would hold up the zoning permit and or just totally cancel out that project. People might just say, forget it, I'm not doing it if I have to replace my septic system. That's a very real threat. But, you know, it's important that these people have up-to-date septic systems, too.
We didn't have just three of the five members from the Board of Health last meeting. That's why we tabled. We want to have a full discussion, so.
So stay tuned on that, I guess, right? And the board will, yep, the Board of Health
we
will come up with
February 4th.
Yep. All righty.
Anything else for Margaret?
Nope. Thanks, Margaret.
Thank you, Margaret.
Yeah, Margaret, thank you very much. No other reports, liaison assignments, and committee meetings.
Pass.
Got the Ames Assessor Mini Board today. I don't think I've made any secret of the fact that I believe it's time with terms coming up for Ames to seriously consider the idea of moving back to just one assessor for all of Story County. Scott County's in the middle of doing that right now. So I'm sure you guys, I'm not sure how it will go today. I'm sure you guys will hear more about it as we get closer to the full conference, Ames Conference Board meeting. Just wanted to keep you up to date.
I don't have anything.
Good. Forgot. I am going to attend the asset meeting with the HRDA tonight at 5:30, the panel presentation. So, yeah.
Public forum number two, comments from the public on items not on this agenda. The board may not take any action on the comments due to the requirements of the open meetings law, but may do so in the future. Not seeing anybody, we will move to announcements from the supervisor. Wayne?
Pass.
Go Cyclones.
Hey, you betcha.
Second that. And I'll pass adjournment.
So move.
Second.
Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. We're adjourned.